Recording is on.
Welcome to the W3C Credentials Community Group call on February 24th. Today we are going to hear about DidKit from Wayne and Charles of Spruce Systems. We have planned to talk about vocabularies and linked data signatures. This was on the agenda from last week, and we didn't get to it with time. If we have enough folks on the call who can speak to it, we will get started on that. And then we'll also give an update on the election. Okay, so IP note. Anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributors to any CCG work item must be a member of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. To join, click on this link that I'm posting in the list. Call notes. These minutes and an audio recording of everything said on the call will be archived at the CCG meetings URL. We use IRC to cue speakers during the call and to take minutes. So all attendees should type present plus to get your name on the attendee list transcript. You can log in to our IRC channel directly and make your comments there, or you can also make a comment in the Jitsi chat. The CG bot, which you'll see present over there, connects both systems. Be sure to type present plus to get your name on the attendee list. Oh, I said that already. If you have a question or you'd like to add yourself to the queue, add Q plus, and that is Q and the plus sign. And if you want to add some few words of text to remind yourself what you want to talk about, or share your question or concern, you can add that as well. If you're not on IRC and you're voice only, simply ask to be put on the queue. This meeting is held by voice, not IRC, so off-topic IRC comments are subject to deletion from the record. Okay, so now we're going to do scribe selection. So we need a volunteer to scribe. And if you've never scribed, it's actually really easy and fun. Or if you're thinking about scribing, it's basically listening to the call and making notes of what people are talking about. And this gets turned into the minutes that are posted, and it helps folks who are not able to join this time or who are unable to join this meeting can follow up and understand what we've spoken about. So do we have any volunteers for scribe selection? Okay, I will go ahead and go to the scribe list. Okay, do we have Christopher Allen on the call? Moses Ma. Actually, I'm going to skip the rest of the folks on this. Ganesh Anand. Jonathan Holt. Kelly Cooper. Adrian Grapper. Chris Winzecki. Dave Longley. Marcus Sabadello. Joe Andrew. Dmitry Zagadulin. Ori Steele. Eric O'Connell. Nate Otto. Kalia Young. I think I saw you.
I can scribe. It's fine.
Okay, awesome. Thanks, Kalia. Scribing is fun, and we love our scribes. Okay, we're going to move on to introductions and reintroductions. Is there anyone new on the call that would like to introduce themselves? I see some names here. Porter Adams, are you new to the call?
Hello. I've been here a few times, but I'm with Learning Economy.
Oh, great. Welcome, Porter. And I see Will Fram. Are you new to the call today? Okay, well, we'll move on. What about reintroductions? Is there anyone who would like to reintroduce themselves? Okay, let's look at the scribe list. Oh, Kalia, we've got you on there, but you're scribing. Do you want to reintroduce yourself? Oh, sorry. Yeah, do you want to reintroduce yourself and I can scribe? Or did you recently reintroduce yourself?
I recently reintroduced myself and said I'm working with the COVID Credentials Initiative now.
That's right. Sorry. It wasn't updated. Let's see. Adam Lemon? Is Adam on the call? I don't think so. Tim, I see that you're on the call. Are you doing anything interesting? Would you like to do a reintroduction?
Sure. Can you hear me okay, Heather? Can you hear me? Oh, my audio.
You guys able to hear me?
Is
am I speaking to the vacuum?
Working.
I can hear both of y'all.
Okay, I guess we'll just move on. Okay.
Heather, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, Wayne.
I could hear Tim just fine, so there might be an issue here.
I didn't hear Tim. I couldn't hear Tim at all.
Can anyone hear me right now?
Yes, I can. Tim, why don't you go ahead and I'll let Heather know when you're done.
Sure. My name is Tim Baum. I'm with the Government of Canada, the Office of the Chief Information Officer, and I guess you could say I'm a Canadian counterpart to what Anil John is doing with the DHS Silicon Valley Innovation Program. We're doing a similar program in Canada, user-centric verifiable digital credentials, and we're tracking the space as close as we can to understand it so that we can figure out how to leverage the ecosystems, the technologies, and actually put together a strategy, not only for the federal government, if you will, but we actually work actively with other jurisdictions within the country and with other, international partners as well. So I'm here primarily as an observer to really learn from it and see how, governments can actually, take advantage of this for example, COVID credentials is one of the files that, some of our agencies are looking at digital identity, permits, licensing, et cetera. And another thing I'll mention is that we work closely with our Innovation, Science, and Economic Development Department, which is kind of the same as the similar to the Department of Commerce in the U.S. So anyway, I'll leave it at that. So thanks for letting me reintroduce myself.
Thanks, Tim. And back to you, Heather. Heather, are you there?
Yeah. Sorry, I was just muted. Were other folks speaking on the call, and I just couldn't hear them?
I believe I was speaking, and so was Charles Lenner and Tim. So I think we can move on, though.
Okay. So actually, Wayne, can I hand it off to you for a moment while I disconnect and reconnect to try to hear audio? I don't think it'll be possible for me to run the meeting if I can't hear folks in the meeting.
Yeah, sure. So I'll just move it past introductions and reintroductions onto everything else, and we'll continue. Okay, so I'm sorry, just pulling up the agenda again. Okay, so finish introductions, reintroductions, and moving on. To announcements and reminders. So I think the first announcement is the Thoughtful Biometrics Workshop. We'll post a link again, and it'll show up in the notes, March 8th, 10th, and 12th. And you can register on Eventbrite. Heather, I was just going through announcements, I believe she's rejoining. So next on the announcements is we're extending nominations by 2 weeks. A lot of folks have expressed interest, but aren't sure about their time commitments and things like that. So we are extending nominations for chair position by 2 weeks so that we can get more qualified candidates up. There has been no response. So if you would like to support the work items and the operations of the credentials community group here, you know, this is a great opportunity to do so, especially if you're, you know, returning to the community or benefiting from the work a lot. We would very much appreciate your contributions there. We'll be setting up a follow-up email expressing this on the mailing list. And then furthermore, does anyone else have any announcements that they'd like to go over? To cue yourself or just speak up. Okay.
Hey, I'm back, Wayne. So if you can just monitor if it sounds like someone is speaking and I'm speaking over them because I can't hear them, will you just let me know in the chat or anyone in the chat? I'm not trying to be rude.
Of course. Yep. I just went over the announcements, including the extension of nomination by 2 weeks.
Yeah, great. And if anyone has any questions about the being a co-chair, thanks to Kim, we've streamlined a lot of the kind of heavy lifting work, and also Wayne running the infrastructure or kicking off the infrastructure task force. You know, I think that as a co-chair, there's a lot of really fun stuff to focus on. It's not going to be necessarily a lot of the, like behind the scenes heavy lifting as it was in the past. There is still some of that to happen, but at the same time, you know, having to do minutes, running meetings, we have a lot of processes documented that in the past weren't documented. So it's going to be much easier to get up to speed faster and work on fun stuff. So I hope you'll consider that. Okay, so moving on to, let's see, progress on action items. I'm putting the link in the chat. So there's three issues I want to talk to. Issue number 181, hold VC maintenance meeting to discuss PRs for inclusion. I wanted to give an update. We had a call last week, as a result of the issue number 170. And, so there's a path forward on updating the VC maintenance spec and the process of that. So if you are interested in updates or participating, please take a look at this, PR. Brent or Wayne, do you want to add anything?
No. We will be creating a work item with the process basically start changes for the next version of the verifiable credentials specification. We are entertaining maintenance changes, things that are clarifications, fixing typos, that kind of thing. But substantive changes to the specification that are not maintenance. We want to basically move to a new version of the spec to entertain that work, as not to break it for implementers and a lot of people relying on the current spec.
Great. So I want to go on and talk about issue 179. This is really just an update. This was a couple weeks ago. Gabe Cohen proposed the verifiable request data model. And there was interest, but then there was not enough interest to have owners. 2 weeks ago, I put a notification that if there's no owners, that we are going to be closing this PR, this work item, this issue. And so this is just a notification that there are no owners, that have stepped up for this, proposed work item. So, does anyone on this call want to step up to be, actually we need two owners to step up to lead this work item. Otherwise, if we don't have that, I'm going to close the PR. So if you are willing to step up and lead, will you please make type in the IRC or the Jitsi chat? Okay, I'm not seeing anyone, so I'm going to close that issue after the meeting. And finally, I just wanted to touch base about the proposed task force, the infrastructure task force. Wayne, I know that you kicked that off earlier today. I didn't know if you wanted an opportunity to give a brief update.
Sure. I think we can close that issue. But we had a kickoff with people who responded to the doodle for scheduling. Basically a summary of the interactions can be found in the infrastructure repository that was newly created. We have just outlined all the different things we wanted to work on with a lot of the, none of these are hair on fire issues that have to be, you know, resolved immediately or something really bad happens, but they are just things that we want to start taking account of so that we can start doing things like supporting NPM repositories with the right security posture. So we do things like have more than just two people know how to maintain the server. So we do things like accept finances from people who have committed to it publicly.
Great. Excited to see how things go with that. Okay. So that's all the basic boilerplate stuff we always go through. So now on to the main event. First up is DigKit. Wayne and Charles will be presenting. Wayne not in his co-chair role, in his role of creating really cool stuff for the community. So I'll hand it over to you.
Great. Yeah. So I can just give a quick rundown about, DigKit and, what we wanted to do with it. I shared a link in the Jitsi. So DigKit is a cross-platform framework for working with verifiable credentials and decentralized identifiers. It's meant to be as agnostic as possible in terms of DID methods, in terms of even verifiable credential representations. We saw a need to consolidate a lot of the specification work that's, you know, been happening here, been happening and other places into an open source project or set of libraries that that could be used in many areas very well. So it's written in Rust. We wanted a statically typed programming language that was memory safe that could also be ported cross-platform. Rust has pretty good cross-platform capabilities. You'll see a lot of the Hyperledger projects actually take the same approach and use the CABIs to have use in other platforms. So that's what we've done here. GoodKit is the cross-platform packaging of another library called SSI, which is written in just Rust. We've been able to use GoodKit to process verifiable credentials and decentralized identifiers across different platforms like Java, like C. We have it running on native mobile apps through the cross-platform framework called Flutter by Google. So it's meant to have one place where we can implement some very difficult stuff. For example, we've implemented LD proof support in Rust, which we couldn't find a great library for. So that's, you know, one significant contribution as part of our code. Charles here has done, I'd say, a lot of the implementation, if not most of it, working with the rest of the team here at Spruce. So open to any questions, comments, et cetera, on our roadmap, our JWT support after LD proofs.
Any questions? If you do have questions, just type Q plus and put yourself on the queue. Mike, you're up.
Yeah, just wanted to, because I think I saw C bindings and stuff like that in there. How thoroughly are you guys testing that and testing that across different implementations? Golang is our kind of primary middleware side of things, and there's not a huge amount of options that, you know, we tend to be implementing stuff from scratch a lot. So I'm wondering if calling into the C bindings using CGo or something like that would be an option, or what direction you're thinking of there.
Yeah, so right now most of the interfaces are just in their early stages, and we pass something like a byte string that represents the UTF-8 JSON back and forth as the inputs and outputs, and we surface errors where possible. Long-term, we expect these languages to have their own ergonomic verifiable credential and a decentralized identifier document representations, which, you know, we would then want to pick good libraries to support and make sure that we can translate between those. I think so that would be the interface right now. We use the C bindings themselves, I think, to Dart. So we have, you know, use cases where it seems to be all together and is passing our integration tests. And Charles was wondering if you wanted to talk about our integration testing.
Sure. There are a lot of tests that are run as part of SSI and GoodKit, these libraries. And we're also running the VC HTTPI test suite and the VC test suite as part of the integration testing. So those are testing against its own test cases and the test cases that are inside those tests. As far as interact with other implementations, like the Go one that was mentioned, that could be useful, and there are different ways that could be done.
Yeah, the intermediate integration would probably be something like using the Go representation of a JSON value and kind of working in those and returning those.
Yeah, if you're taking byte streams, that actually makes it, you know, just JSON, that's pretty easy to handle going from a struct to a byte stream on the Go side. So that would certainly make, you know, calling into the C bindings pretty easy. So cool. Thanks.
Any other questions? Okay, so next on the agenda we had was vocab and LD signatures. But the folks that we wanted to have talk about, I'm not sure that we have a quorum on the list who can actually talk about this. Manu was going to speak about it, but he's unfortunately unable to attend today's meeting. And Mike, you're really the only one from that group. So I'm wondering, if we should go ahead and have this conversation early today, or if you want to make comments, or should we try to move it to a future meeting?
You know, I'd be happy to talk to the vocab stuff. And I think the, some of the pure like LD side of things is better left to Ori and Manu, you know, and folks like that. But one concern I have about diving in real deep on the vocab side of things is that we do kind of want their inputs and take on that, right? Because all of us are bringing a slightly different perspective into the table and getting different benefits out. So that's my only real concern. I'm happy to give my, kind of my perspective on the vocab side of things, where it's been beneficial, how it's fitting into the ecosystem, if that's, helpful, and then opening it up for conversation.
Yeah. I mean, let's ask the community, folks who are on the call. Do you think that's a good use of our meeting time today, or would it make sense for us to, give you guys half hour back and we can take this up in the future? I see, C is on the queue.
Oh, I think that was from a previous, queue.
Oh, okay. Wayne.
Yeah. Mike would love to hear about, you know, your journey through, the traceability vocab or any other kinds of vocab that you're working with. And just, because I think it's a great data point. I'm glad we actually have a lot of time for this because we can hear other perspectives in later meetings. The vocabulary really seems to be a popular work item because enterprises, governments, et cetera, have all been starting to look at the work that's being produced here and understanding it as a neutral, you know, community-driven base that they can start to work off of. So if you could describe, you know, your...
Yeah, happy to do that. And we fortunately also, I think I see Brian Munns on the call as well, so I might actually get some of his feedback as well. And part of the reason for that is, for context, I've known Brian for a long time, and obviously he's been really heavily engaged on the Trace vocab, but he actually managed developer relations for a pretty large analytics company previously. So his perspective coming into this kind of world fresh was quite interesting, right, to see. You know, one thing I would say, you know, it just kind of starting from first principles, one of the important things from the vocab side, at least in our case, is ensuring that every, you know, kind of common representation of the data can be translated to back and forth comfortably, right? And so when we look at the specifics of that with the traceability side, we need to have JSON schema objects because we're representing this stuff on OpenAPI web services, we're handling stuff around, you need some type checking and things like that. But we're also working extensively with this data as, you know, in JSON link data form, right? So that we can leverage it from a machine learning standpoint or sign verifiable credentials on it, et cetera. So applying that layer of meaning is very important there. And so kind of being able to link, and we're now at, I think it's an improved state from where it was even a few weeks ago. But effectively, on the vocab side for traceability, we've taken the approach of registering a schema first, then building out test, you know, what does sample data from a type standpoint look like for that? And then it goes ahead and builds out the JSON LD that maps over to that schema. And then if you register a fixture as well, it will actually sign an example credential for you. And so that really helps, you know, especially a normal developer just coming into this that's familiar with JSON or JSON schema, maybe at a high level, saying, hey, I've got this data type that I need to be able to interact with in a common way and in different manners for different purposes. How do I go step that through the flow? What does this look like as a verifiable credential, et cetera? And so that side of it has been very nice to see come together. We have also stubbed in the beginnings, and it kind of quietly, but the auto generation of OpenAPI, just get methods and stuff like that, just so that you could use some of the better interaction tools like Redoc to look at what do these structures look like when they're going over the wire. And so that's another area that we'll be continuing to build out. But for us, it's really about, you know, ontology and making sure that when someone says, like in our case, dealing with ag or environmental stuff, you know, if someone says that they've got such and such disease or insect identified in a field or on a package, that we know what they actually mean by that, right? You know, was it on the package? Was it at the field level? Because that has, you know, sometimes interesting side effects if you misinterpret that. And that happens a lot. We see this with the current UN FAO schemas around phytosanitary certs, where, you know, someone may say one particular thing and, you know, mean one thing by it. And by someone, I mean a nation state. But another nation state may interpret that entirely differently, right? So, you know, something that may actually be fine may be treated as a failure, of an inspection or vice versa, which a lot of times is worse. So this is really a very helpful way to identify and standardize, you know, system to system communications, traceability, et cetera. The other side benefit, and we've taken, and this is a little hard to represent in JSON schema, JSON LD is very good about this, but the notion of inheritance. So being able to say that you have, an inspection object that may have different, subclasses off of that, right? So an agricultural inspection, a steel inspection, an oil inspection, et cetera, you know, chemical property inspection. Those are all things that share a common type. So you can write logic into that, kind of parent inspection object and trigger behaviors off of that based on what's actually contained in the, you know, subclass to, implementation. And so that gives some really cool flexibility around, like in our side, we can take in and have our API speak agricultural inspection, but know based on the content of that, well, this is actually a site clearance form for something that was pre-cleared and it passed this test and we know exactly what that meant. And so that's kind of at the high level, I think, what's important. One last statement I want to make, though, is, and I think we've all kind of seen this, and I've been definitely putting some effort into this. I know Brian has as well. One of the difficulties when these things get traction is that it gets very hard for people not living in the community and like all the weekly calls for different working groups, right? To even understand what's going on or what you mean by something, because a lot of times the documentation side, is just not great, right? Or it makes sense to a developer of someone who's been living in like this particular VC domain or credentials domain, but not to a normal like enterprise Java dev or something like that, who are the kinds of people we have to interact with this, stuff over the wire. So I think at least from the traceability side, we're getting ready to go do another major documentation overhaul there, but really just trying to make it so that from the first time you hit the README or hit the actual index and spec, that it at least makes sense and we can give someone the context if they're coming in, just making a sole assumption that they have some technical experience, but no knowledge other than that, and linking directly out to, okay, well, what do we mean by swagger? What do we mean by a verifiable credential? What do we mean by JSON LD? We've seen great contribution into that. Like Ted, I know, who's on the call, has been awesome at helping out with that and language clarity. You know, Brian as well, and quite a few others. So that kind of making this stuff more approachable to the outside world is going to be an important theme, not just for this, but other projects like VC HTTP API and, obviously the, vocabulary side on the, like immunization credentials and things like that, right? That kind of approachability is very important because sometimes you have very non-technical people looking at some reasonably technical, docs, right? So. And with that, I'll pause. I don't know, Brian, do you want to add anything about like kind of that outsider perspective from the community coming in and looking at this kind of stuff for the first time or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you were right with I think the primary challenge is what you mentioned, where it's not necessarily technical. As long as somebody knows what JSON is and all the basics, they're going to be able to like work on it. But the primary challenge, I think, is, you know, when I came in fresh however many months ago, just, you know, very fresh. So just determining what is the reasoning behind all of this. And also it's so new, which is one of the exciting things once you get wrap your head around it. But in terms of understanding, there's not much out there. But so like you said, that's the challenge there to determine, okay, why do this and why is it important? And I think if we did a little work there to convey that, it would be easier because there are a lot of people interested in this area, you know, just generally with all of it bundled together. And so, so I'd say that's kind of the primary challenge. And, as well as like, especially the JSON-LD, like some of the technology was used for different things, you know, prior to the way we're using it. And so in looking up information or trying to figure out, what may be going wrong or debug or whatever, there's very few kind of central places to go, which is not, none of this is a criticism. It's just that it's in the early stages of its life. And so it's just a matter of kind of getting all of this stuff in all of the free time that nobody has, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, the plumbing stuff has been, you know, pretty key. And like I'm onboarding, I got two other developers now looking at the traceability project who both have very strong supply chain backgrounds, like working with SAP and EDI back in the day. Like one of them wrote a good chunk of GSX's code, if you're familiar with that kind of stuff in the supply chain and invoicing world and large scale management of, you know, how the world runs. And some of the, you know, some of the comments have not been great, but it at least gives us a working direction of what way to go, right? Where are we having gaps? And it starts at the motivation side. And then it's, okay, now how do we assume that you know, might be a Java or .NET dev, you know, used to working with XML or used to working with JSON. How do we carefully introduce concepts like linked data to you? How do we explain how we're building that out? And then how do we explain why we want to avoid repetition, right, in code and be able to link these objects together from an ontology standpoint, right? So I'm going to pause there.
We've got folks on the queue.
Yeah.
So first up, Tim, you're on the queue. Over to you.
Yeah. Again, can you hear me okay?
Yes, indeed.
Okay. Yeah, I just want to offer a bit of a different perspective. Again, I'm coming at it from more a government perspective. And, you know, quite frankly, we have like super amount of interest in the verifiability aspect. Any credential can be verified and there's an ecosystem that enables it. It can be verified in and of itself. I would say secondary to that interest is the actual interoperability of the payload. I know that might sound, kind of weird, but the thing is, I've been involved with, like, going back almost better part of two decades, involved with interoperability with law enforcement systems. You probably heard of NIEM, National Integrated. I forget what it stands for again. So it's such a long time ago. And we've been involved with the jurisdictions on trying to standardize, like, vital statistics data. I think you have the equivalent in the U.S. called NAFSIS. We have the National Routing System. It's a really tough problem to solve, like the interoperability. And quite frankly, it's for each community to solve it and understand the semantics within their community. And again, I don't have much familiarity with the supply chain management, but I would presume that the need for quote unquote data interoperability or semantic interoperability is just as important as it is for any other domain. So the reason I'm bringing this up is that I just want to make sure in my own mind, like with the work that we're doing, that there's a very clear separation of interest between the actual verifiability of the credential, if you will, without regard to what's in the payload, and then the actual payload itself.
Yeah.
So let me finish. Like, totally recognize the utility of JSON, JSON-LD. You know, we had tons of stuff way back with XML schemas, like a decade and a half ago where we had tried to put all the validation rules in there. And before you knew it, became so complicated. It was really tough. You try to figure everything out in advance and then you have a schema. And that was way too complicated, and then everybody fell back to simpler ways. The other thing I want to mention, too, is that the other thing we're discovering, again, this is from a government point of view, is that we have to work within ecosystems that we have treaty obligations with or standards that are well set. And I always refer to verifiable credentials as the new kid on the block. There's mobile driver's license, there's digital travel credentials, there's traditional PKI, et cetera. And we got to figure out how this stuff will work together. And, you know, some of the terms I'm using is I'm calling you. So, example, the advice that we're providing is around reopening the economy, like, you know, how do you validate, first of all, presenting individuals who they are? It might be done with a driver's license, it could be done with a passport, it could be done with what we're developing, a trusted digital identity. But then, you know, the second swipe, if you will, it might be a vaccination credential. And there may be different verification infrastructures that are invoked, some that we have control over and some that we don't. And some that need super high volume, you've got thousands of people you got to put through a checkpoint or border control. Dealing with long-lived documents like diplomas and documents and contracts and whatnot. So, you know, we've been working, and again, we aren't the lead, but our other department, Innovation, Science, and Economic Development, have been working with developing a digital trust infrastructure strategy to be a little more generic and trying to figure out how this stuff fits together. We're concluding a project which we have six vendors with radically different use cases for verifiable credentials. You know, anything ranging from security clearances to, I think, cannabis licensing is one of the other use cases, like work permits, et cetera. And we're vendors to work to let us, to tell us, advise us on what's the absolute minimum that all these use cases actually can work together. And at the beginning of the project, we were looking at, you know, the specifics of the payload, but I can't really rationalize the semantics of getting a government security clearance with getting a cannabis license with having the right HVAC permit to get on a work site. And it's really tough to do that, but we need to have all that stuff to work, because there may be a situation where you work in a government building, and maybe it's a government marijuana lab, which I think we have, is that you need someone with a government security clearance, you need a, you know, marijuana permit and a work permit, and you need like a bunch of other things. So that's kind of where we're coming from. And I just caution that, you know, I was involved with this, again, better part 20 years ago, the interoperability stuff. And it is an intractable problem from a universal perspective. So, you know, that's just my perspective I just want to offer.
Yeah, no, Tim, and that is actually an awesome call out. And one of the things that, at least on the supply chain traceability side, that we've done to kind of aid in that, this really is around verifiable credentials, but it's pretty easy for developers to say, hey, I've got JSON, how do I exchange this, right? And let's try to standardize some kind of output. What's hard is to say, how do I go from this JSON that I'm used to looking at into a verifiable credential, right? In JSON LD format or something that's interchangeable. Yep. And that's an actual benefit of the way we've done the traceability. And that's a good call out, because that's something I think I'll add to the docs this week, because we've set it so that you can literally say, I've got this JSON object. Let me drop it in. Let me make sure that can sanity check, verify everything else, and then run all the way through and generate how do I generate a verifiable credential from that object with sample data? And what does that look like? And how do I know that that object verifies? And that actually is like, when we look at the root goal, right? That's it. The interoperability, everything else is a side benefit from this approach, but that really is the actual big benefit of this project.
So, yeah. If I can add, one of our vendors is very well deep into MDL and digital travel credentials, and and they're actually working on developing like a security clearance, verifiable credential, and they're basically going to be extracting stuff from those artifacts, those digital artifacts.
Awesome.
and doing some cryptographic derivations so that we know that it actually came from that issuer. There may be some sort of derivation process or delegated issuer. We're just kind of playing around with those terms. So that if they need to derive like a credential, like not a selective disclosure thing, but basically say, well, you got your digital identity from the province or from the passport, and we're going to stick it together with a security clearance, a transportation security clearance, and we're a delegated issuer or something like that. We can issue it as a verifiable credential. So when that thing comes across the wire or across, you know, a checkpoint, we can actually have the policies in place to say, you know, this thing is coming. This is how you check it. To say number one, that it's actually verifiable. And then number two, actually inspect the further inspect the payload for whatever you need to do in the business context.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. And I think it's a great use of these kinds of projects. So, excited to see this stuff, you know, continuing to move forward. So.
Yeah, very cool stuff. Wayne, you're next up on the queue.
Yeah, question for Mike or Brian. Could you please go into the nuts and bolts a bit in terms of what is in a vocabulary? We see the different terms in there. Sometimes there's JSON schema. What are these? How do you use them? And what would you do if you didn't have them? How would you
nuts and bolts wise? Happy to speak to that. So, you know, it really starts with actually adding at least the way we've approached it on the traceability project is it starts from JSON schema. Just saying this is the structure of the JSON object that we care about. These are the things that it references, like place or person, entity, right? A business entity, et cetera. And so that side of it, I think is really important. The other side, and actually it's probably helpful for me to just go into the code here and explain a little bit on screen share, just how this stuff is structured. And let me see if this will share.
Yeah, we can see your screen.
Awesome. So the kind of the key thing, and we're getting ready to restructure the README, really the key thing from a folder structure standpoint, and we do call this out in the README, but I think it's still improving a little bit. If my internet will behave. But basically within the docs folder, there's a schema structure, within there. And then, test vectors, which are just example objects, as well as then credentials. And these are the credentials that are being automatically built out just by adding a known schema object into there, right? And then going through the process of registering it in the system. So we can literally go in and just by adding a schema up in the schemas folder and then giving it the test fixture to say, this is what kind of data I expect to see there. It will go through and properly generate a full-on VC as an example for this. And within the code, if you step through the code itself, it actually shows how to do that as well. And that's something we need to call out in the docs so that folks that are approaching, like, how do I even issue a VC to begin with, right, can get an idea of that, because that I know has not been readily apparent to other folks coming in from outside the community. The other side is kind of that more public facing spec side. And so this is up, this is generated with every build. In theory, my blank screen will eventually resolve. Let's find out here. I'm having DNS network issues. But there is, you guys will see it. There is an index file in there, that builds out with every, build and actually has links out to every schema object, how the JSON LD is structured, real world examples of everything, et cetera. So I think my internet might not be entirely dead, but it's close. So
I'm really impressed at how well you're speaking to us right now while that's happening.
Yeah, it's like I think it's DNS issues. I live in Redneckville, like out in the country on a farm. So sometimes it's fine, sometimes it's not.
I think we're having one of those technology issue days. Tim, you're back on the queue. Did you have something new? Or was that to address the previous one?
No, I'm good.
Okay, great. Then, Michael, you're up.
So just on the topic of these vocabularies and schemas, are there any public sort of standards or schemas that you've found to be useful? I guess a favorite one that I always mention is UBL, the Universal Business Language. Are you able to directly use some of those public schemas, or do they have to be ingested?
No, we definitely are. Certainly with GS1, EPCIS, and schema.org stuff, we are leveraging that. UBL I have used in the past. one area that I think this serves a benefit from is when you look at like UBL, for instance, there's a lot of like sub derivations of that in use across Europe. So these kinds of, you know, vocab, especially from the linked data side, right? Once you kind of get the core notions mapped over into linked data, then it becomes much, much easier to say, okay, if I see UBL Netherlands variant off of like UBL 2.2 or something, right? You can actually build a mapping for that much, much easier and say, hey, this is the JSON LD I want to see from this. And this is what it translates to if I want to go move that to something else. And so those are kind of the interesting side benefits from using this when we look at some of these other vocabularies that are out there, on the market, you know, or out in the wild or in the open in the case of like UBL. So
just a very quick follow up. Eventually you're going to get to the point where you're going to need to be able to interop between these vocabularies, like UBL has persons and places and contacts and all that, and every other vocabulary has the same thing. How do you manage that, and how do you still remain compliant with the original specifications?
Yeah,
multiple specifications.
It's a very, very good question. I think the trick there is because we're ultimately rolling this stuff into JSON LD. The trick is very similar to what's been done on certainly on the biological space, where there's some really good ontologies and thesaura, think of it as a digital thesaurus, where when you see object A from such and such vocabulary, but by leveraging, you know, some kind of linked data relationship, whether that's RDF or JSON LD in this case, right? That what is meant by that, right? What is meant by place actually means this particular element, right? Place.name, right? It means place.title in this other vocabulary. And so that will be a next step that will come over the next year sometime, probably, is beginning to put the frameworks in place for how do you handle the thesaurus side of it. But it's a little bit of a lower priority, honestly, than making sure that we can go in. I think Tim was getting at this point, right? Than making sure that we could take standardized JSON and get reliable, testable, continuously tested, verifiable credentials off of this stuff as the starting place, right? And then we can kind of build out from there and leverage some of the other side benefits.
Cool. Great job. Thank you.
Does anyone have any other questions for Mike about this work? And Mike, also thank you for jumping in today and having such a great discussion so far. Wayne, I see you're back on the queue.
Yeah, I wanted to ask Mike or Brian about what are your thoughts on other data formats that aren't JSON? CBOR seems to be a popular one. There's also a whole swath of things, as Tim mentioned, written in XML, and there seems to be some relationship with RDF there.
Yeah, for sure. I think getting some auto conversion tools to pull that stuff in will be key. Like, we've manually converted some XML stuff, but there are good ways to go from like XML over to JSON schema. And so I think providing some tooling around that will be helpful, but bidirectional, right? And this has been a side thing. This is something Ori kind of kicked off, I think, without meaning to. And he's not on the call, so I'll talk good about him. But is that kind of notion of being able to go from like JSON schema over to JSON LD and back again comfortably, regardless of what you have. And I think ultimately those kinds of auto conversion stuff are going to be pretty important. The other side, that internally we're looking at is things like gRPC, right? And protocol buffers, right? And there are some auto conversion stuff, but there's room for improvement on some of that stuff too. And when we look at leveraging like verifiable credentials at scale and things like that, JSON's great for the out in the wild human readable version of this. But what if we're exchanging a pile of these at high volume, you know, behind the scenes on a system or in context of the, you know, distributed machine learning network or something else? Well, that's when you start to look at, okay, well, maybe there are other formats that represent this data the same way, right? Represent these relationships or the tuples or whatever. In a clean way that can be exchanged at scale. And so I think these vocabs serve as a starting place to say, okay, well, here's our kind of master. And now here's how this looks in this format. Here's how this looks in that format. Here's how you pull from this other format in, et cetera.
Okay. I think that that's wrapping up our conversation today, unless anyone else has any final thoughts. I don't think anyone's on the queue. No. Great. So again, thanks, Mike, for jumping in. And for folks who joined late, we are going to be continuing the conversation about vocabs and linked data in the future. We just had a limited number of folks on the call that were originally planned to do some speaking to it when we were kicking off this topic. Also, if you joined late, we are giving an additional 2 weeks we are adding 2 weeks to the nomination period for the co-chair. We did not have any nominations. In order to nominate, it's a self-nomination, and so you need to send an email to the CCG list. If you have any questions or you're interested in self-nominating, you can contact me or Wayne. I think that's it. And with that, we will conclude the meeting. I want to give a shout out and thank you to Kalia Identity Woman for scribing. And thank you to everyone who stuck through the various technical difficulties we had today. I hope you have a great afternoon. Thank you.